apologize because Expreme Deutsch nicht gut. So I am going to speak in English, but I hope that you can understand, and if at any point you don't, you can do this and I will stop and we can talk until you understand. But to break the rules first, we've been talking about energy, and you've been very passive energy out there. And I think it's time for some active energy. So if you're able to stand up and move and make as much noise as you possibly can, get on the line. Without touching the ground for 738 days. Trees over 1,000 years old, 200 feet tall, which in meters is a little over 63 meters, something like that. Not quite 63 meters. And the tree was marked to be cut down, and I decided that wasn't a good idea. But although I'm known for that, I come from a very different background. So I was asked to share just a little bit about my background as a way to have this conversation of energy in this dance between what I call the being and the doing. I just talked about the being and the substance. What is the correlation, what is the connection between who we are being and what we are doing? And that if we choose to live our lives as an inquiry, as a question, that question can lead us in a direction that we never would have imagined. So I think I'll start from that place, and then we'll have the next days, those of us who are interacting together, to further develop this concept. But for me, it's really, really important that we really think about who we are and who we are being as we are taking action. Because otherwise, we can still create a problem even as we're trying to solve a problem. If we're not conscious in how we are showing up in the work that we do, we can accidentally create another problem even though we're trying to create a solution. So for me, knowing who I was and where I've been is an important part of who I'm always becoming. Because if I forget who I was, then I lose my connection to the past and I lose my connection to who am I as a being, and how am I learning as a being as I move forward? Because one of the things I've realized in my life is that sometimes when we get to know something, what we get to know gets in the way. Because what we know becomes like a closed door. What we know becomes like the blinders on the horses, you know? This is what I know. And then we forget, there's a whole world out there. This is what I know. And so constantly questioning who I am in the realm of knowing where I've come from helps me constantly learn and grow as a person. So although I did this action that was very radical, living in a tree for 2 years and 8 days without touching the ground, it's a little radical, I know. But that's not actually who I was. It's not actually where I come from. I always have been a deep questioner. In my family, the joke is that the day I was born, the first cry that came out of my mouth was, "Why?" And I've been asking questions ever since. So that part is a part of who I've always been. I've always been stubborn. I was always the one questioning. I was always the one getting in trouble. That was me. And at the same time, I was struggling with trying to figure out how to fit in. And so my life was a little strange for me the whole time because I so did not fit in, and at the same time I felt I was supposed to fit in, and so there was this struggle my whole life. I grew up with a traveling preacher for a father. We lived in a camping trailer that we pulled behind our car. That was our home for most of my life growing up. So a lot of the world that I knew was religion. It was in church or on the road to the next one. I was raised to appreciate nature and to respect nature, but I was not raised with the awareness that I have now of what we have done to the earth and what we are doing to each other and what we are doing to the future through our choices. But I was raised to respect and appreciate nature. Growing up poor and growing up traveling meant that I spent a lot of time up there. And it's funny to me now how so many of my talks are in here talking about out there. But growing up, I spent a lot of time playing outside because that was our playground. And that growing up with two brothers and no sisters means I climbed a lot of trees. And I enjoy climbing trees. So I grew up in that experience, but also being raised poor, I was made to feel very ashamed from a very young age. I'm 5'10", 5'10", which is almost 3 meters, and I've been this tall since I was 12. And so my family being so poor, we wore clothes that other people gave us. And usually clothes of other 12-year-olds didn't fit me. So my pants were too short. Now that's back in style, but at the time the short pants was not in style. And so I was made fun of for having pants that didn't fit, clothes that were out of style. When my family would travel, a lot of people would donate their food for us because my father, being a traveling preacher, did not make a lot of money. So because I was made to feel poor and feel ashamed of feeling poor, I decided that the idea of making money was important. And I didn't want to feel ashamed anymore, so I was going to figure out how to make money. So I graduated high school at age 16 in the United States. Most people graduate when they're 18. I went into university and I majored in business in university. I did not major in environmental studies or biology or any of those things. I majored in business. So I was finding it interesting the discussion at the end, the little pieces I got about, well, what about money as a factor in energy? And I'm fascinated by that subject, and I still am to this day. So I majored in business in university. I opened my first business when I was 18 years old. I opened a restaurant and a club, an 800-person club. And I did that for 2 years, and then I became very self-destructive for a while. I had this challenge inside me that never went away between how I viewed myself in the world and the world that I was being shown. In other words, many of us, and I imagine most, if not all of you who are in this room, are here because you know that there's a better way to do things in the world than what we're doing. You know that we have the resources, we have the minds, we have the capacity to be doing a better job as a human animal species on this planet. And so you're here because you're thinking in that way. We can be different. We can do different. And so I grew up always feeling that way, and then at the same time tried to stick myself in the box called success. And nothing, I never felt right here. I always felt a little bit like an alien child, that some alien flew over and dropped me into this world, and I never quite fit. So I became self-destructive partly because I felt, why care? No one else seemed to care. The world that I was raised in, I was taught to be that I was bad and wrong for being me. Because I was always in trouble, I wasn't trying to get in trouble growing up, I was just being me. But that got me in trouble all the time. So the message for me growing up was that who I am is bad and wrong, and that I don't fit in this world. And then I tried to make myself fit, but it still didn't feel right inside of me. So I went through a couple of years being extremely self-destructive. I was an alcoholic and a drug addict. I actually became a drug dealer to support my habit. And a lot of people were like, whoa, because you don't read that very much in the news about me. But I share it because I believe that owning and accepting all of who we are is absolutely crucial in making the difference we want to make in the world. Because anywhere we try and hide something from ourselves, we will see it happening in the world. The way the politicians lie about what they're really doing, the way the corporations lie about what they're really doing. Anytime we're not being honest about who we are, we're doing the very same thing. We're lying about part of who we are. And if we don't want others to do that, I don't think it's okay for us to do it. So I just tell everything about me. So that way there's nothing to hide. So I became a drug dealer literally because I needed to earn more money because my habit had become so big that I was running out of money. So I became a drug dealer to support my habit. cleaned up my life after another long story, which I won't get into, and got back on track and became a consultant for the restaurant and bar industry. So I would go, bars and restaurants would hire me to teach them and consult with them to make their businesses more successful. And I was actually very good at that, and I did that for a while, until one night, the irony is, my friend had been drinking, she called me, she said, when do you get off work? And I said, about 20 minutes. She said, will you take a cab and come get me? I haven't owned a car since I was 18. So she called, I was 21 at the time. She said, will you take a cab and come pick me up? I've been drinking. And I said, of course. So when I got off work, I took a taxi to her. We got in her car. I was driving. We got in her car. We made it out of the parking lot to our very first stop, and we were hit by a drunk driver. So she had been the responsible one calling me to drive her. We made it as far as one stop and got hit by a drunk driver. And she had a very small two-door car, and he had a very large Ford Bronco. It's a very huge automobile. He hit us so hard that the back of our car went into the back of the seats. The steering wheel, the glass from the back of the car came off, hit the front window, came back, cut our face, cut my chest, cut me all up, and the steering wheel of the car went into my skull. And I lost my short-term memory and quite a bit of my motor skills. And I jokingly say I've always been the one to learn lessons the hard way, so the universe had to shove a steering wheel in my skull to steer me in a new direction in my life. Because I just don't learn lessons the easy way. So the universe said, okay, here, the steering wheel in your skull. And as I was healing from that, that's what made me question, what do I really want to do with my life? What is my purpose? That our purpose, I don't see there's anything wrong with making money, but if our purpose is just about making money, that's a pretty small way to live. And so for me, the question came to me as I was struggling to talk again, as I was struggling to walk again, as I was struggling to get back to being me, the question came to me, who am I really? Who am I underneath what my parents have taught me? Who am I underneath what society has taught me? Who am I? And I want to figure that out, and I want to figure out what my purpose is in being here, and I want that purpose to make a difference for others. And I did not know what that was going to be. I just knew that I wanted to do something of meaning with my life. And so 2 weeks after I was released from my last doctor, some friends were going on a road trip. One of the people backed out. They needed someone to go on the road trip with them to help cover the gas and the food and everything. And they said, hey, Julia, you want to go? Sure, because I love traveling. I haven't been able to travel for a year because I've been going through therapy. So I got in the car with them, and about 2 days into it, like, was ready to go jump off a cliff. Because one really good way to find out a lot about yourself and others is go on a road trip with somebody. Because you're stuck together all day, every day, and you have to make decisions together, and there's no, like, running away if you get on your nerves because you're on a road trip. So 2 days into it, I realized, ooh, maybe I should have done this road trip. But I felt the need to stick with it. So we made it to California and entered the Redwoods. And I was so blown away. I was so in awe. These trees that grow to be 20 stories tall, 20 levels of the floor. Like, you put a building 20 levels up, these trees grow to be that tall and taller. That they're 1,000 to 2,000 years old. That you walk on the soil, the way that the forest grows in the Redwoods, the lower canopy begins to die. So it's just like these huge pillars of trees and ferns and small things on the ground. But it's just so much like a cathedral. And I walked into it, and I had the experience of the sacred for the first time in my life. I grew up with a preacher for a father, but I never had the experience of sacred. So I walked into those Redwoods, and I walked in the Redwoods, and I was like, this, if there is a God, this is it. This is where it is for me. And so then, a few days later, I ended up telling my friends, I'm not going any further on the road trip, I'm staying here. They said, why? I said, I don't know. They said, what are you going to do? I said, I don't know. They said, are you sure you want to do this? And I said, yes. So my friends left, kept going on the road trip. I stayed in California. I ended up getting a volunteer position at a festival called Brandy on the River. That festival has a theme every year. That theme of that year was dedicated to preservation of the ancient forest. So they had amazing speakers and presenters and groups who were doing tables. On Sunday of that festival, I said, I'm going to do something to help the forest. I didn't know what, but I knew I wanted to do something. Went back to where I'd been living. I sold everything that I owned, got a backpack, what I needed to survive out of a backpack, and I went back to California, and 5 days later, I was in a tree. And I ended up in that tree because I was trying to get involved and active in the issue, and I didn't know how or where. I did not come from an activist background. I did not come from a family who was engaged in anything but church. And so I had no tools, no skills, no resources on how to be an activist. I had no clue other than some really cool Greenpeace ads I had seen, which I always thought were really cool. The people in the boats, the little bitty boats or the big boat, trying to stop the wind. Water cannons out. Those are cool! I understand those people! So I was like, I'm going to do that. And there was no that to do. So I was trying to get involved for 5 days, and there was one day where this guy who I'd met pointed up to a tree on the hillside above where the camp was, where activists were based. And he said, you see that tree up there, man? That one that's like up at the top? And I said, yeah. And he said, that's a treason, man. That's how he talked to me. And I said, great, what's a treason? And he said, that's where people sit in trees in order to protect them, man. And I was like, oh, that's cool. I was in trees. I didn't grow up. This is something I can do. And so one day there was somebody walking around saying, we need someone to sit in Luna. We need someone to sit in Luna. And this Luna tree said was started before I got there. And I volunteered to sit in Luna. I was like, I don't know how to be an actress, but I know how to sit in trees. I finally got something to do. But because I was new, normally, no trees had ever been through the wintertime before in California. They always ended usually by October. So this was heading into the wintertime. It was the first time a tree had ever gone through the winter in the United States, ever. And so because I was new, coming at the time when normally everything's closing down in the activist world there, they didn't want to pick me, because they didn't know who I was. In the United States, there's this big thing where the government sends in people to what's called infiltrate activist groups, and they set activists up to throw them in prison. And now in the United States, after September 11th, you can be charged as a terrorist doing the kind of actions that I do. In the United States, I can be charged the same way as the men who flew the planes into the Twin Towers. They changed the laws to make it that dangerous to be civically engaged in the United States. So people didn't want to pick me because they weren't sure, especially because I wasn't all dirty and grungy yet. I was cleaned up and looked okay. They were like, you must be from the FBI. You must be from the FBI. So they didn't want to pick me, but nobody else would volunteer. And he'd walk around saying, well, anyone sit in Luna? And I was like a little kid going, pick me, pick me. He picked me. And that's how I ended up here in the Luna Treesa. Not a very glorious entrance, but that's how I ended up in the Treesa. And from there I thought, and I'm actually most famous for what was my third sit, but I went up twice before for about a week each time. And after those first two times, I actually didn't think tree sitting was for me. Because coming from a business background, I saw all this energy going into the one tree sit and very little energy coming out. Like very few people knew that at that time 98% of the old growth redwoods have been cut down and that they're still being logged. And 98% of these big old trees are gone. We will never get them back. And they're still cutting them down. Nobody knew about that. Nobody knew that they were cutting on steep slopes that were causing mudslides that were destroying people's homes. Nobody knew about that. So I saw all this energy going into a tree sit, but a big reason to have a tree sit is to make people aware of what's happening to the forest. So there was very little energy coming out. So I didn't think tree sitting was for me. So I started researching other forms of activism I could do. But then the Luna tree sit came under attack. The loggers moved up the logging plan to where the Luna tree sit was. The people who were sitting in the tree freaked out and came down. Luckily, the loggers didn't find out they were down, as I found out that they'd come down. And I got up in time before the loggers found out that it was actually a chunk of time when no one was sitting in Luna. Luna's over 1,000 years old. It was marked to be cut down. And so the activists came down scared because the loggers were not only threatening to cut the tree down, the loggers were threatening to blow the tree up. They were threatening the activists. And when you're miles away from anyone who knows if you're okay or not, it can be very, very intense and scary, because they actually can do things like try and kill you, which they did to me. And they actually did kill a friend of mine, another activist named Gypsy Chang. They killed him. So these activists got scared, understandably, because they are very violent things do happen. So I went up the third time and I said, well, I'll stay here for 3 weeks to a month, because that would, I can bring everything I need for 3 weeks to a month, and that way it won't take any more energy. Because every time in the past, people would usually only stay for a few days. The longest was a week, usually. But usually just for a few days. So all the time it took to bring people and supplies and everything up to the tree and then make sure they got down safely, that was a lot of work getting people up and down and up and down. So I thought, if I stayed 3 weeks to a month, that would give everybody a break, and then I'll figure out what I'm supposed to do with my life. And then in that 3 weeks to a month, I realized that nature has always been communicating, and we've forgotten how to listen. That everything in the world is constantly communicating, and we have forgotten how to listen. And I thought, I have to try and be the translator. Just as when we speak different languages, we need a translator. Because we've forgotten the communication of the natural world, we need translators. And I said, I'm not going to come down until I've done everything I can to protect this tree and this grove and to make the world aware of what we're doing to our own growth forests. And I did not know how long it was going to be, but I knew I wasn't going to come down until I'd done everything I could. And then 737 days later, the company signed an agreement that protected the tree and the grove that I was in. And 738 days later, I came back down to the ground to continue the work on the ground. And to wrap it up, what I'll share, the points of it that I think are valid, is that when I share my story, I don't share it so that people are like, wow, Julia. I call it the Julia Butterfly Show. And the Julia Butterfly Show actually doesn't change the world. And I'm committed to making a difference. So when I share about me, it's not so that people go, wow, Julia. I share about me because that's the only story I know to share from that I know what I'm talking about. Everything else is just an idea. But my experience, I know. And so I share from my experience more because I know in my heart that there is a symbolic tree for each and every one of us in this room and each and every person on this planet. That the symbolic tree means you might not be meant to go live in a tree, but what is it in your life that can have you become bigger and better than your mind could comprehend? Because people come up to me now and say, Julia, thank you for doing that action. I never could have done that. And I was telling people, well, neither could have I. Right? On December 10th, 1997, as I'm standing at the base of this 20-story tree, looking up and can't even see the top, climbing for my very first time in my life, having had no training at all, just being given a harness and a rope and said, this is how you move, that's how you climb. That was my training. I'm standing with that much training at the base of this tree in the middle of the night going, ah! On that day, if you had told me what I was about to go through, I would have laughed at you, I would have screamed, and then I would have run away. Because who I knew myself to be then was like this, very narrow view. Who I knew myself to be then is not the girl who I am now. Not even the girl who's standing in front of you. Because part of the reason I volunteered to sit in a tree is because I like playing by myself and I'm good at it. Being with groups like you freaks me out. I sit up here before it's my time to talk to you. My heart beats so hard. I'm such an introvert that even though I'm just getting up here talking to you, you need to know that who I was December 10th, 1997 would never have stood in front of you and shared this way because you freaked me out, even though I'm other great people. But it's my design. So I share this to say that who we think we are is usually very limiting of what's possible for us. It's very, very limiting because the mind thinks in a very limiting way. But what I do know is if we integrate our mind, our heart, our spirit, and our body, anything becomes possible. If I'm the girl who could live in a tree for 2 years and 8 days, get a company to agree to settle and protect the area, even though it said the whole time it never would, if I'm the girl who got the United Nations to listen to me, and Congress to listen to me, and school kids to listen to me, and me being the girl who didn't even want to talk to them, If I can do that, then anything is possible for every one of us. And that's why I share my story, because I want all of us to wake up in the morning and look at this world and ask ourselves the question, what am I going to do today to make the world a better place? And that's different for every one of us, thank goodness. Diversity is absolutely vital in the beauty and the health of the natural world, which means it's absolutely vital for us too. Yay! Good news! So I don't care so much how we go about doing it and what your unique role is. All I care about is that we wake up in the morning this passionate, this lit up, just like when we were jumping out and going, woo! I want us to wake up every day and go, woo! What am I going to do today? Bring it on! Yeah! I also want us each to know that who we are is exactly who we're meant to be. As I mentioned in the beginning, I've been stubborn and getting into trouble since I was 2. I finally learned how to use it for good causes. Right? What I was taught growing up may be bad and wrong, actually is an asset. It's actually a tool in my toolbox. They're like, you want to cut this tree down? Boom! I ain't moving. My dad came out to California, he did a press conference, and he said, if Maxam Corporation, which is the corporation I was protesting, if Maxam Corporation thinks they can outwit my daughter, they don't know my daughter very well. So, all of who we are is exactly who we're meant to be. Even the things we think or others have told us is a bad thing, I can promise you, it is a gift if you just refocus your direction. We do not need to change ourselves. Sometimes we might just need to change our focus. So whatever it is, who you are, when I first started the action, the fact that I was young and the fact that I was a woman was used against me. The news was very patronizing. The news kind of like, oh, isn't she cute? Give her enough time. She will come down. She will get those atrocious nails and hair done. And she will go out on a date and get on with her real life. Like, that was a lot of the media in the beginning. And I'm like, in the middle of this, I'm going through the worst winter in recorded history of California. I'm going through a company literally trying to kill me. I'm going through activist groups having meltdowns and attacking one another. I'm going through such intensity, and he's like, oh, isn't she cute? I'm like, no! Not you! But you know, it's interesting. When I stayed and stayed and stayed, the fact that I was young and the fact that I'm a woman became an asset because I was doing something no big, burly dude had ever done before. Even the loggers were like, you know, we don't agree with you, but damn, girl, we wouldn't do that. I even began to earn the respect of the loggers because they have a very intense job outside as well. So they could relate to what I was doing, and I'd be like, whoa. So I share these to just say, all of who we are is exactly who we're meant to be. We are a wealth of energy. And oftentimes hidden in the places where we don't think to look. And that if we really embrace all of who we are, be willing to reshift our focus maybe in some areas to make it more constructive instead of destructive, then what is possible for ourselves in a world has no limits. Oftentimes, the greatest obstacles in the world are the ones we set in our own minds. Yes, the external world has obstacles. I dealt with some intense external obstacles while I was in the tree. But one of the greatest lessons I learned was that inner energy, the inner resource of that inner energy. The worst storm in recorded history of California, 90-mile-an-hour winds. I don't know how much that is in kilometers per hour. 90 miles an hour wind. I was on a 4x6, you know, a little over a meter by 2 meters platform with plastic tarp as my only roof and walls, 90 mile an hour winds, sleet, hail, rain, lightning. My roof and walls were ripped by the storm. I was getting thrown all over the place, and I thought I was going to die. That is some very real external energy, right? Coming at me. I am very much at the effect of some very hardcore energy. The worst in recorded history, told us. But in the beginning, I was struggling against that. I don't want to die, I don't want to die, I'm going to die. And that thought was destroying me because I was fighting against an energy that I did not have the physical power to fight back. When I let go of struggling for life, and I actually embraced death in that moment, I had this aha, the light bulb went on above my head. If it's a physical fight between me and the storm, I'm going down. Storm's winning. I got to find another way to deal with it. And what happened was I realized that the quickest way to die is to get born. The surest way to death is the moment we're born. And we spend most of our lives afraid of and fighting the force that we cannot change, which is called death. And as a result, we very rarely truly live our lives because so much of our energy is wasted on resisting something we cannot change. In that moment when I realized the quickest way to die is to get born, I might as well embrace death as a part of life and live every single moment like it's my last. To live every single moment as if this was my last moment, would it be the legacy I want it to be? Would it be the marker on my gravestone? Would it say about me what I want it to say? And in that moment, I became more alive than I've ever become in my life. Because I'm a human being, I make a ton of mistakes on a daily basis. But I have this commitment of living every moment like it's my last. Of living every moment of saying, what can I do in this moment that honors those who came before me and honors those who come? We are all living with the privileges and the problems of those who come before us. And so, too, we are the ancestors of the future. Can you imagine if all 7 billion of us on this planet lived like we were ancestors of the future? If we lived embracing that death is a part of life, so why not live life to its fullest? Why not give every ounce of who we are to what we really believe in? Can you imagine what our world would be like? It's so possible. And I know that now because I've lived it. And so I come and I share my story to invite us all, myself included. Every time I talk, I ask to the universe that I speak from a listening perspective so that I'm learning too. Can you imagine if all of us, myself included, woke up every day, said, I'm an ancestor of the future. How do I want to live in a way that honors that? If we lived every moment like it was our last, because no matter what, we are always giving our life to something. Even passive energy is still changing the world. If we choose to do nothing, it still changes the world. It's actually impossible to not be making a difference in this world. It is scientifically, as well as philosophically, impossible to have no impact. So actually what that means is 7 billion of us are activists. It's just are we conscious or unconscious in the choices we're making. Every moment of every day, we are giving our life to something. Why not give it to something that has us wake up in the morning and say, yeah, bring it on. Yes, I want to be a positive contribution. I want to make a difference for the world I'm a part of. And that's why I'm here with you all, and thank you so much.